Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next 2 hours, you're stuck with me. I've got Nate here from Strictly Diesels with me. So I suspect we're going to talk a little bit about diesels.
Let's do that.
Chevys, Ford, yeah. Dodges.
Sure.
We can talk intelligently about those three.
Sure.
We can take sides on which one's the better, and the year, and the make, and the model, and the application, and do all that kind of stuff.
So sure.
If you're interested in diesels, today can be diesels, but we'll take car questions no matter what.
Tires,
oil, you know, if you're having a problem with your wife, we'll help you with that.
Not so much.
We can comment. We can at least offer suggestion. Both. I mean, how many years you've been married?
A few.
Okay, we got 49.
Yeah.
So we got some experience.
There's
in
some
there.
Experience.
Yeah,
it,
we
yes.
got some experience in there.
Yes.
So that might be something that we can help with and stuff like that. So what we're going to do is we're going to go to the lines because we've got Richard sitting there in the wings already. So Richard, thank you for calling early. How can we help you?
Well, gosh, that was pretty fast. I wanted to tell you, I listen to 960 Monday through Friday. I just never think about it on the weekend. But I have a 1963 Falcon Ranchero. It's got a 4-speed on the floor, and it's hanging up in third gear. And I recommended that I do bearings and bushings. I know nothing about cars. And I'm sure I was just a little uncomfortable with them, so I had a mobile mechanic come by, and he said the same thing, but he doesn't want to do the work. I'm looking for somebody that does transmission work on old cars because they're a pain to work on, I understand.
Okay, is this got external linkage, or does the shifter go into the top of the transmission?
It goes into the top of the transmission.
Okay. I'm going to send him to Alger.
Yeah.
All right. A&S transmissions. Whoa, let me ask you a question. Which part of town are you in?
Bethany Home on 19th Avenue.
Okay. I would call A&S Transmissions, and A&S stands for Alger and Shelley, or it can stand for automatic and standard. And Alger is one of the finest transmission guys I've ever met in my life. He's not going to guess. He knows how to fix it. He's been around since Jesus was a baby, and and he's just a no BS guy. I sent somebody to him one time, and the customer called back and said, he just flat told me I am not even close to the best guy to be working on this AMC transmission, but I do know somebody who did, and he sent me to somebody who was just great. So I'd call Alger and talk to him about it. The reason I ask you external and internal, when you hang up in a gear on an external linkage, almost always you can adjust that out. But internal's a different story. Internal, you've got the forks. You're going to have to pull the lid off the transmission, and you're going to have to figure it out. Alger, I am 100% sure Alger's capable of that.
You know, you asked me if it's internal or external. I know nothing about cars. I could be telling you wrong thing. I have no idea.
Okay.
There is some sort of an adjustment from outside. I don't know if that makes any difference.
No, if the shifter goes in the top of the transmission, there's no adjustments externally. It's going to be all internally. But if the shifter is mounted on the floor, and then we have rods that go to a lever that goes first gear, second gear, and then we have a rod that goes to the lever third gear, fourth gear, and then we have a rod for reverse, that's external linkage. And if it's got external linkage, then I would think that we have at least a 50-50 chance of fixing your problem with third gear by just making some adjustments at the external linkage.
I think that's what I have is external. Okay. I've seen it, but I know nothing about cars. So how do I get a hold of this gentleman?
A&S Transmissions. That's I don't know. I don't have his number handy. He's up in
that's
your
right.
neck of the woods. He's
and
up on
S.
A&S. A is in automatic. S is in standard. Automatic and standard transmission. And it makes no difference that his name is Alger and his wife's name is, what the heck's her name?
Shelley.
Shelley, yeah. Alger and Shelley. So A&S is Alger and Shelley or automatic and standards. It doesn't make any difference.
Okay.
All righty?
And what road are they on? You know, I don't need your address. I'll find them, but...
Yeah, I don't know the answer. I can't tell you where
he's at. You tell me a lot. Thanks. Yeah. I really appreciate it. Take care.
And tell him that you have a coupon for $250 off, and Mark Salem said he'd send it to you. Now, I tell you that just so to introduce you to Alger. I'll tell you more about Alger. Alger worked for me when we opened up our gas station in 1979. He was in high school out in Ahwatukee. And Alger worked for me. And I'll tell you my Alger story. My Alger story is this. He comes to me as a Nova, Hot Rod Nova. And he says, can I use the bays on Sunday to do some transmission work on my Nova? And I go, what are you going to do? And he goes, I'm taking the automatic out and I'm putting a standard. And I said, no, you're not. That car will be in there for the next week and a half. No, you're not. And he goes, I promise I'll be out. And I said, no, you don't have the drive shaft. You don't. Yes, I do. I have the drive shaft. I have this transmission. I have the boot. I have the template. I have everything. I have the pedal. I have the swivel. I have everything. I said, I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to pull. I own a tow truck, Alger. I'll pull your car out and I'll leave it in the middle of the street if it's not gone Monday morning. This is a true story. Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock, he's laying rubber in front of my house. He's laying rubber in front of my house. And that's awesome. And that kid from that point on was just one of my favorite kids. He grew up with a strange father, but he was a great, great kid. And he got transmission-itis back then. And so that's he's
awesome. Sounds like he just likes to work on cars.
He's the one. He has the skills. He knows transmissions, and he's not going to be doing a lot of guessing. So it won't take him long to figure out what needs to be done. Do we have some worn forks? Do we have some worn internal components? Is our Sprague clutch hanging up? Whatever. He'll know. With a little bit of diagnostic work, he'll know. Just tell him you have a 250.
All kinds of things could be wrong.
Well, I don't think this is a major thing. If he has to take it apart, then you're going to put seals and forks in it anyway. I mean, if you're going to take it apart, then take advantage of the fact that you can put new parts in there to guarantee the longevity of the transmission. But you could also just say, all I wanted to do is stop hanging up in third gear, and he can do that.
I just want to drive it. That's all I want to do.
I understand. What motor's in front of that four-speed?
It's a little 170.
Okay, a six-cylinder, straight six? Okay.
Yes, sir.
All right, I thought if it was like a 289 or something like that, that would make all the difference in the world.
It's a terrific car. It is just an thing. And you used to see a lot of Falcons, Rancheros around Phoenix. Now you hardly ever see them. I don't know where they all went.
Yeah, I don't know, but those Ford guys, they hang out at night most of the time, and so they're not in the public's eye. And Nate's looking at me, just shaking his head because he's a Ford guy. I'm a Dodge guy.
Well, I wish I had a diesel question, but I don't.
That's all right.
So I want to thank you for your knowledge. Okay. I really appreciate it. Somebody suggested I call you. I just never listen to 960 on the weekends. I always listen to it Monday through Friday. So I am so glad I called you. You make me feel better already.
Okay. All right. Well, I want to tell you something. I've been doing radio since 1988 in the Valley. I've been with KKNT since 2011. And I'm real particular about who I send people to, because the last thing I want is a mad customer that some guy ripped them off and now I end up in the food chain. So I'm pretty particular about who I refer to. Alger is somebody that doesn't pay me. I don't take any money from him, but I have all the confidence in the world. So anyway, thank you very much, Richard. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Down the street from you is Action Auto.
Yeah.
And he's a good guy.
He's a good guy.
And he's at I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom has been around since 1983, and I've known Tom since 1983. He has ASE Master Certified Technicians. They know the difference between right and wrong. The management team knows the difference between right and wrong, and they can help you make informed decisions, and that's what it's all about. So if you live anywhere near I-17 in Deer Valley, Action Auto Repair is a good place for you to go. When we talk about transmissions, another transmission shop is Automatic Transmission Exchange, but you'll notice Automatic Transmission Exchange is all about automatics. And that's part of the reason why I didn't say anything about them to our caller, Richard, but because it's a manual. So right. It makes a big difference. Automatic Transmission Exchange has been around since 1968. Phil started with Power Glides and the old two speeds and three speed GM and Ford and Chryslers, and he has now morphed into these eight speed transmissions. And with the computer shift in the car based on speed, load, throttle, how much beer you got in the trunk, and all those other variables, I should say.
Yes.
So when it comes to Automatic Transmission Exchange, he's the only transmission shop I've got on my list of recommended ones. He's at 40th Street in Washington. He's well worth the drive if you have any problems. You just call and make sure they can take you in, and if you have something that you can duplicate, which is something we beg for. Right?
Absolutely.
And if you have a problem and you can show us how to make the problem, we may even hug you. You know what I'm saying?
Makes our lives easier.
Oh, it makes, yes. And they're cheaper.
Yes.
I mean, if you can just show us what it, well, with transmissions, it's the same way with Phil. When you look at him, you just look at him, he's Fred Flintstone. You know what I mean? He worked on Fred Flintstone's car. He's that old, but he understands the fundamentals, and we used to shift transmissions with vacuum, throttle pressure, and different stuff. Well, today we use a computer to do all of that. Yep. It still shifts it the same. It's just the signal's different.
Yep.
So he's good. We got another caller. Who might that be?
That would be Tom.
Tom, good morning. Tom? Tom?
Oh, he should be there.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Tom. Okay.
Well, while we're waiting for Tom, let's go to Dennis.
Dennis, we'll do Dennis, and then Tom, we're going to come back to you. He probably stepped off to go to the bathroom or
something
like that.
Yeah.
Dennis, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mark. Hey, I have a 02 Crown Vic, and just for about a week now, the light comes on and off, the engine light on, the car hesitates almost. I don't want to put anything in your head too early, but almost like a bad tank of gas. And it just, you know, and then it goes away. I drove it to AutoZone just so they could maybe give me a code or something. And just before I got there, the light went out, and they weren't able to pick up anything.
Okay.
And it's been doing that for like about a week. I've been on the assumption it's a bad tank of gas. And I'm just going to drive it. But it cut off on my wife the other night. I had to go pick her up. When I got there to pick her up, I started it. It ran fine all the way home, no light. Any ideas?
Well, I'm going to kind of clean up some of what you said. First of all, the code doesn't mean anything other than the computer says he sees a problem in the electrical system, the fuel system, and this and that. So if you have a code that says that you need an oxygen sensor and you put one in, you have about a 30% chance of success. The code tells you this is the area we see of concern. But I'll tell you what I think. It died on your wife, and when you got there, it started right up. So it's not a fuel supply problem. If it had a substandard fuel supply, and if it wasn't forcing fuel forward to the engine, then it wouldn't have started when you got there. Otherwise, you're going to have to cycle the key on and off so many times, and the pump will run for 3 to 5 seconds, unless it sees the motor start, and then it runs all the time. So as you cycle the key on and off, if the system was dead, if the fuel system was down, then it would have not started. It would have just not started. So I'm thinking it's not a fuel system. And then the check engine light, I'm thinking it's going to be something electronic, the pickup assembly, some kind of coil problem, some kind of ignition system malfunction on the ignition side. But it's really, we're going to plug in a scanner, and we know what the code says, but there's codes out there that says A, and we find out that it's really an H. So the computer's smart, but it's not that smart, and that's what our job is. I'm much better to tell you where to go if you'll give me a geographic location. Where are you at?
I am near Luke.
Okay, so that's northwest, west central, right? Okay.
That's in Goodyear, I think.
Yeah. Is that in Goodyear, or is that north?
That'd be north.
Yeah, it's outside Litchfield Park a little bit, out of Waddell.
Well, I think what I would do is I would take it to Harker's. Harker's is 38th Avenue and Indian School. I don't have anybody way out there in the west side, in the north and west side, but Harker's is at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Bob runs the shop. His wife, Ellen, runs the front counter, and Bob knows more about cars than I do. And he's a real thorough kind of guy, and he'll figure out. The real question is, when you have this problem, what's going on, and is it a spark-related problem or a fuel-related problem? And you have to figure that out before you're going to fix it. So there, you don't want to hire a shop to do gas, and let's try the fuel pump. Oh, that isn't it. Let's clean out the fuel tank. Oh, that isn't it, and on and on and on. You don't want to do that. So Harker's Automotive, Harkers, and call and make an appointment and get your car there. Right now, 602... Oh, let me start over. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We're going to go straight to the phones. There is open lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We've got Tom and Rod in queue, and you're welcome. We have five lines altogether, 602-508-0960. But, Tom, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning. I've got a problem with my notification on my 2007 Malibu. This notification about oil life comes up, and it notifies me, what percentage of oil life I have left. And then at some point, real soon, which I do, and then I reset it. And this time it didn't reset. It just keeps saying oil. Any suggestions?
Well, the reset procedure, how do you reset it? Is it literally a reset button that you hold for 3 to 5 seconds with the key on and the engine running? Is it something that simple?
No, it's pretty simple. It's just a sequence of a couple of button pushes, and it's always worked fine in the past.
Okay.
It just quit working now.
Okay. I have two comments. Number one, this was a good idea way back then, but it's gone now. With oils that we have today of the super synthetics and with the cars that we have today with clean emissions and all that kind of stuff, that information may be very false to you, because in spite of the fact that you have an 07 Malibu, with oils that we use today, you could go 8,000-10,000 miles if you put a synthetic in that. And that would really screw up that whole system in your car. But then again, your car is 407 years old. And so,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I think what I would do if I were you is I'd change the oil, and then I'd disconnect both battery cables. Disconnect both battery cables and touch the cables together. There's no spark. All we're going to do is just discharge all the electronics inside the computer. So don't touch the battery terminals together, because you'll have a hell of an explosion. Take the cables and touch them together. And then put the negative on, or put the positive on first and the negative on second. And that kind of reboots the whole computer, and then see if it works. Otherwise, it's going to be some sensor in somewhere in the oil system, and it's measuring flow and temperature, and the computer's extrapolating that into time and science and all that other kind of stuff. But I don't think it's in your best interest to spend a whole lot of money on this. I think Nate's shaking his head right now. I'd take the bulb out of there. I would take the bulb out of there and use a window sticker in the top of left of your windshield, and I would let that dictate when I'm due for an oil change. The technology a long time ago is not what it is today.
Okay, I really have no problem just keeping track of it with a little sticker.
Yeah,
and I didn't think it was going to be worth spending a lot of money on. I was just curious.
Yeah, it depends on somebody would have to do a little bit of research. It's going to be time, temperature, and speed and RPM. So the computer has to be looking at all of that, and then it's going to look at this mathematical formula that's been embedded in the RAM, and it's going to come to that conclusion. The question is one of those sensors, the one that tells it how hot the oil gets and how fast it gets cold, that sensor's defective. And so the computer's struggling with understanding what's that going on. But I want to tell you something. At $175 an hour, you could rack up a pretty good bill. And this could take 2 or 3 hours to find. Now, the fix could be 10 seconds to fix it once you find it, or it could be another bunch of money. So those are the things that you're up against. What part of town do you live in?
New River.
Okay. Anybody up there that? I would send him over to Blackwell, just because I'm mad at Tom. And so if I send him this 07 Malibu, he's going to call me and say, what are you sending that to me for? And I'm going to say, because you're the best guy to do it. Blackwell, and New River's on the other side of the world. And Harker's would be okay for you, too. Harker's at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Bob there would certainly, he would have been a technician during the time your car was made. So and he would have a good chance of being able to pull that off.
Yeah. Great.
Okay. Thank you.
Very informative. Thank you.
You betcha. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Rod, you're up. How can I help you?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. This has nothing to do with diesels, but I am looking at buying a Shelby Cobra replica, basically because I can't afford a real one, and have two questions.
Okay.
One, is this something, if I bring in, you guys can go through thoroughly and tell me what kind of shape it's in? And secondly, do you have any experience or input on those cars?
Okay. Number one, you're asking us for what we would affectionately call a used car checkover. So give me a list of stuff that's good, that's in the middle of the road, and needs my attention. That's what you're asking, a used car checkover.
Yep.
Piece of cake.
Right.
Nate, approximately dollars on a used car checkover.
$150 to $200.
And we're in the same boat because you just don't know how deep you're going to have to go into that. As far as now, what was the second question?
I mean, do you guys have any experience or, you know, how good are these things?
Okay.
They're cool to look at, that's for sure.
We love those cars. I can answer your question bluntly. It depends on the technician. I'll give you an example. I have a guy that's been with me, I think, 30 years. His name is Eddie. And Eddie is like a son to me. And that guy is a Ford connoisseur. He can cite chapter and verse on every Ford that's ever been made to this day. And to give him a Shelby and say, do this or do that, on a 1 to 10 scale, this is going to be a 3 or a 4 for him. This is not a car that needs to go to a tire store that also does mechanical work.
Right.
So I can tell you that from the guys in town, Harker's, again, would be Bob could handle this. Blackwell Automotive, he could handle this. Where do you live?
I'm up in Cave Creek. I'm not real when I want to get it checked out, I'll go about anywhere. You know, I'm not concerned about that part.
Well, the reason why I say is do you know anybody who's just really good with Fords? Okay.
Used to.
Okay. Well, and we're down at Warner and I-10, and that's the reason why I ask where the hell you are, is because we're on the other side of the world from you. And
Blackwell would be good.
Blackwell. Yeah. Blackwell at 40th and Greenway would be good. And you just tell him, say, Mark Salem says that if you need some help, give him a call, and Mark will help you figure this out if you can't do it yourself. But that's, Blackwell would have no problem with your Shelby at all. Nothing. Okay?
Okay. Great. Thank you.
All right, you bet. So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Nate's here, and if you have a diesel question, a Chevy, a Dodge, or a
Ford.
Ford. I just have a tough time.
There you go.
That thing
Ford.
Runs around in my mouth. When we come back, I'm going to ask you, which one lasts longest, okay, and which one is the most dependable, and which one has less problems than the others. And I'll give you all three, and I'll chime in as well.
Okay,
so we'll talk about diesels. Nate from Strictly Diesel, he knows more about diesels than I'll ever know in my life. We met in this, and he's responsible for my son being involved in diesels, and I've hated him for it ever since. But then again, I do forgive him. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, of 10 o'clock, and my name is Mark Salem, and sitting here next to me is Wayne. I'm looking because we got this stupid thing here, is Nate from Strictly Diesel. If you have a diesel question, the 6.0, he loves the 6.0. He loves that 7.3. He loves the 6.9, 6.7 Dodge, 6.7 Ford. And you would never believe that he is a diesel guy because he doesn't smell like a diesel guy.
Oh.
Not now.
Yeah.
But he's been around for a long time, and your shop is up at Pinnacle Peak and I-17.
Yep.
And you work on those three trucks, Chevy, Dodge, Fords.
And Nissans.
Nissans. Okay, yep. Okay. That's something you just picked up on.
Well, we've had those for a while, but there's not that many of them out there. So when we get them, it's kind of a treat.
Okay, and so the last question real quick is what do you drive?
What do I drive?
Yeah.
A 6 liter.
A Ford.
Yeah,
okay.
Ford.
Okay, so he drives a Ford, but he works on Dodges and Chevys as well, and the Nissans.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to go to the phones. Tom, you're up first. Tom, how can I help you?
I just have a quick tire question, light phenomena. The Scion XV 2009, it's been a great car. light came on, indicating a tire issue. Have always taken good care of the car. Go to the dealer and they say, oh, it's probably a sensor, maybe a 199, and we can fix it. Well, they come back and say it's all four tire sensors, meaning about $800 to watch your tire sensors go on and off.
Okay, hold on. Okay, stop. I have two words for you. Did you get your car back, or is it still there?
No, my car's back.
Okay. Did you have them do the work?
No.
Okay. Go to Discount Tire. That's all I got to tell you. Go to Discount Tire. Anybody can deal with these sensors. But I hear this all the time. I hear these huge, huge estimates from, now, to be fair, from the chain stores, from the independent market, and from the dealerships. But when it comes down to it, the people that know that your car the best is the guys at Discount Tire. And they have a professional at every single location. And you just go in and say, I got a tire pressure problem, a monitoring problem, and they'll take care of it. And they'll give you an estimate before they work on your car. So that's the very best I can offer you.
Perfect. I bought the tires from them just about 2 months ago. They've always been great, so thanks so much.
And you know what? If you just bought those 2 months ago, I'll tell you what I'm going to bet you. I'll bet you a buck that at the end of the day, they're going to make some financial consideration to you, because the answer is going to be, well, we should have caught that. And I'll bet there's going to be some kind of a credit associated with your new tires. And I know those people well because I work for them. I'm going to wash my underwear in front of everybody. I work for them on the legal side. So oftentimes when they're sued, they'll hire me and say, hey, take a look at this. But what I'll tell you is the management of Discount Tire is second to anybody that I've ever met before. You talk about giving honest to good people, it's the Discount Tire people. But anyway, that's where you're going. And we're going to move on. But thank you, Tom. Thank you very much. Terry, you're up next.
Yeah, how you doing, Mark? You've got a great program, by the way.
Thank you.
I get occasion to listen to you. It's awesome. I bought a 2010 Jeep Wrangler from a friend of mine in Prescott. And before I picked it up, he seemed to get a check engine light. And it looked like it was ECM. Then it disappeared. And before I picked it up, I heard a tick, 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 tick in the engine. So looked like one of the lifters. I took it to a mechanic, and he changed the oil, cleaned out the engine, put new oil in again, synthetic, changed out all the lifters on one side where this is coming from. He said he scoped it, and he saw, you know, the noise coming through, and it didn't fix it. So him, he says, you know, I don't feel bad. He said, I feel bad, so he didn't charge me for labor, but I just paid for the parts. He says, if I can get away with that, that'll be great. He couldn't figure it out.
Okay.
So it's still tick, tick, tick.
Okay, well, what you've just described is the recipe for a disaster. There's no such thing as doing what you just described. If one of my guys came up to me, and Nate's shaking his head with me, this is not what we do. There is a way to determine exactly where the noise is at, exactly what's causing the noise, when it happens, when it doesn't happen, and all that other kind of stuff. So the idea that we talk to our friends and get a consensus that everybody should replace the lifters. Do you know, Nate, how many times have you fixed a lifter, a quote, lifter tick with an exhaust gasket?
Several times.
1 minute.
And it happens all the time.
Happens all the time, yeah. Yeah.
And so we have a tick, tick.
It's usually on low RPMs.
Okay.
When you get to the high RPMs, it goes away.
You just got to find a guy with gray hair that's worked around cars all of his life, who just wants to listen to him himself, and he's going to do some testing on it, and he's going to figure out what's causing the ticking noise. But I'm telling you right now, the very best tech I have would have a tough time between an exhaust leak and a lifter. Between an exhaust leak and a lifter.
How many miles on this Jeep?
60,000. Looks like brand new.
Okay.
Right. They live in Chicago, so they came to Prescott and they drove it for a couple of weeks and back to Chicago. So.
Okay.
And they've had it from the beginning. So.
Okay. Now, do you have a check engine light on that? Do you have a code for that?
Yeah. It wasn't on. Then when I picked up my truck, the check engine light came on.
Okay. Well, that's kind of an important thing. Because I'm just telling you now, and Nate, if you disagree, you raise your hand. The code doesn't mean what the code says this, but this isn't the fix 50% of the time.
Could be something related or unrelated.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's just the computer saying, to my best estimate, this noise is coming from here, but the computer doesn't have ears and they don't work real well.
Right.
And so, what part of town do you live in?
I'm in Phoenix. I was originally going to take it down to your place in Mesa, but it was like 26 miles, and we used this mechanic before, and so I was closer. Okay. I took it to him.
Okay. All right. Well, if you want
to
look
in, at... Mountain View. I'm in Mountain View by 7th Street. So just on the north side of Phoenix.
Okay. Blackwell would be a good guy. Yeah. He's booked up a lot, but Blackwell, I mean, he's good with noises, and he's a qualified technician. I think he's a master tech, and so Blackwell Automotive would be the guy I would turn you over to. Anyway, got to run. I'm going to have to take a break, but Bob and Tom and Mo, you stay there because that's my 1, 2, 3, and as soon as I get done with this break, I'm coming right back to you. Welcome back, everybody. 43 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. I want to comment, Nate, on the gentleman that had the ticking noise, Terry, with the Wrangler. And he had a ticking noise in it. And he took it into a shop. And the guy says, it's going to be lifters. And he does a bunch of work. And it doesn't fix the problem. So he says, well, I'll just charge you for the lifters. I want to tell you how that wads up my underwear. That just, so let me just put it in English. I'm going to guess on your car, and at the end of the day, I'm going to ask you to pay for my guess.
Right, exactly.
I'm not going to fix it. Right. I'm going to guess, and I'm going to have you pay for it. How many times have, in the last 6 months, how many times has your shop gone in the wrong direction, and how many times have you said, well, just pay me when I'm into it and go away?
Yeah, it hasn't happened.
It doesn't.
We eat it.
Exactly. You eat it.
Yeah.
If you say it's lifters, and you go in and do lifters, and it's still there, you eat it.
Right.
You're done. You told him you were going to fix it with lifters. Can you see how upset I am?
Right.
It's, folks, this is the way it is. This isn't the game where we're going to, just pay for the lifters. Well, he probably got some labor, and he got his lifters out of it. He made a bad diagnosis, and he didn't pay for it. The customer paid for it.
Right.
That doesn't make sense.
No.
Okay, Bob, you're up first. How can I help you?
So, Mark, my son recently had his transmission overhauled, that automatic transmission exchange.
Okay.
And then they told him he should have the fluid changed every 20,000 miles. So I want to buy one of those B&M transmission pans that has three extra quarts, and then it has a drain plug in it.
Okay.
So you can just drain it.
Okay.
And then we can just drain the fluid, and then we don't have to bring it into the shop. You think that's a good thing?
Yeah, they also make a siphoning kit that you can drop down the dipstick tube and set it right on the bottom of the pan and suck all the fluid out of it that way. And if you really want to go...
This pan gives you three more quarts. The three extra quarts, do you think that's good or not really?
Well, I think if you were running the Baja, that you'd want as much fluid in your system as possible, because you're gonna get it hot and you're gonna be using that automatic transmission and stuff. But let me change your question, Mark. Do you have an extra pan that has three extra quarts and it has cooling fins on it? No. Have you ever bought one? No. Except the customer wants one, and I'll put it on for him. Do you see a benefit to him? Yeah, but in an extreme way, in a real extreme way. So if you're just trying not to go to the 100,000-mile transmission service interval and you want to do that up, then does your pan right now have a drain plug in it or not?
No, the factory pan does not.
Okay. So, I mean, that's not uncommon. They make a kit where you can take the pan off and you can put a drain plug on it. You can also take one of the cooler lines off and put 3 feet of hose on it and stick it in a 5-gallon bucket and start it up and just run all the fluid out of it. I mean, there's 100 different ways to accomplish your goal, but the 3 quarts I don't think are going to make that transmission last another mile.
On the diesel side, we look at extra capacity as extra cooling, mm-hmm. where it spends more time in the pan, so the 3 quarts on the diesel side of things does help us for certain applications.
And when it's used on the top 75% of its normal routine, when it's out there pulling horse trailers and mud bogging and all that other kind of stuff, crazy stuff that we do. But for, Bob, is this like a son that's in high school or something like that, or an older kid?
No, he's married. He just drives it, basically just drives it like a car back and forth to work and to haul his mountain bike around. So.
Okay.
What kind of vehicle again? I'm sorry, what?
2014. It's a GMC Sierra with the 5.3. That transmission doesn't have the best reputation, I don't think.
My only comment too is at 20,000, that does seem a little aggressive. But are there adjustments or any check-ins that the shop wants to do while it's there every 20,000? You know, that they may be doing that you don't know of. That's my two cents there. But
I see your point. I don't like the 20,000 because I think with a synthetic fluid, and most of them are synthetic now, I think that's draining out a whole lot of for nothing. And I don't think first of all, I don't do that at 20,000 on anything I own.
No.
And neither do you.
No.
And so when do you change your diesel transmission fluid?
Depends on how I use it.
Okay.
If I use it, 30.
Okay.
If I don't, 60.
And I'm probably 75 around there, 75 or 80.
Yeah.
70, whether I use it or not, whether I'm hauling horses, I don't care. And it's for you and I, we know what it smells like. We know what it looks like.
Right.
We know all that kind of stuff. But I'm just, I'm thinking that you're going to spend some money, hopefully to extend the transmission life, and I don't think that that's good money. I think just service the transmission like the owner's manual said, filter and fluid. And I'll tell you what I would do. I'd do the filter once, but then the next time I'm due for service, I'd do the flush, and then I'd do the filter, and then I'd do the flush.
Right.
And obviously with the flush, I get all the fluid changed. With the filter, I only get the filter changed plus 3 or 4 quarts. So if you wanted to do that on an annual basis, then the odd years, you change the filter and 3 quarts, and on the even years, you flush it, and you're done. And that's going to give you the 100,000-mile transmission service. Agree? Nate?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry, I thought you were talking to...
No. Bob, I hope that helped you, but I just don't think that doing what you're going to do is going to give you what you want or what you expect. I don't think it's going to make the transmission last any longer.
Yep.
Anyway, thank you, Bob. Thank you very much. A good thought-provoking thing. Tom, you're up next. Tom, how can we help you?
Hey, love your show. Passing through from Colorado.
Okay.
And just have to pick your station up, but I got a 2019 F-150. 3.5 EcoBoost, and the cooling fan comes on pretty regularly, even when I don't think it should.
Well, I'm going to turn you over to Nate. Nate hit his head when he was 12 years old, and he's been a Ford guy ever since. And so, I mean, I do have a couple of comments, but go ahead.
It's a great comment, but I would say, are you toying with this F-150 or just?
It will do it even when I'm not towing.
Okay.
In 40-degree weather, I'll come off the highway pulling into wherever I'm going, and the cooling fan is spinning down at that point. Why was it even on?
Well, we like to think that enough air is being drawn over the radiator or cooling stack when you are going down the freeway, but that's not necessarily the case. That fan can get in the way of airflow, so they have to turn it on anyway. These EcoBoost motors are building a bunch of heat. So whether you're on the freeway and or towing or just city traffic, those fans are going to be operating more than you think. So I don't know that I would call it abnormal. And for what it's worth, if there is a problem, I think you're going to see a check engine light sooner than later because it will tell you, hey, I'm running hot, or hey, there's something wrong here.
I like that, I agree with you 100%. I'll tell you what I'd do if I were you is I'd stop by an auto parts store and get a temperature gun. And when you see
I have one.
All right, hit the upper hose. When it's on and when it's off. And I'll bet you when it's on, it's north of 220 or 210, 220. And I'll bet when it's off, it's less than 200. I'll tell you, because we want that motor. I don't care if it's gas or diesel. Well, let me just put it to you this way. When does water boil? Nate.
Oh, jeez.
He helped you.
Yeah, he helped me. Thank you for that.
Right. Under pressure.
Yeah.
That's it. Okay. I'm with you. Here's the deal.
Yep.
This is straight from the oil guys. Water boils at 212. Every time you shut your car off, we're going to add water to your oil as we condensate the air. And we cool the air, and the moisture turns into droplets of water. We got to get and in the old days, we used to run 160 thermostats, and we'd poop our pants if the thing ran to 180.
Right.
Today, we want them to run at 220 because water boils at 212.
Right.
So we want the motor running at 220, and that way we get the moisture out of it. The PCV valve sucks out the vapor of the water, and everything is happy. And that's why the new oils have a melting point of 500 degrees. So your motor, when you get it up over 300, the oil's not going to fail. Your Ford motor will, and so will my Dodge, and so will the Chevy.
Yeah.
But the oil's not going to fail because the oil's good to 500 degrees. And so in your particular case, gun that upper hose, and I think you're going to be able to say, hey, right around the 200 to 220 mark, that thing's running, and anything less than this, it's not. And I think that'll put you at ease.
Perfect. It's a perfect example that my son factory outboard four-stroke boat motor that it was accumulating water in the oil, and boy, we were all panicky about it, and got to checking, and the guy before us had taken the thermostat out.
Yep, yep.
Well, you talk about a lot of condensation. I mean, it was a half a quart of water in there for condensation. So your point is well taken. Perfect. Yeah. Head on.
And it's hard. The hard guy is the gray-haired guy in front of you that's been working on cars since the 50s, and he's the idea of running 220, 230, 240 is just beyond his ability to grab grab that. But today, but today, let me ask you a question. I got 168,000 miles on my Dodge diesel truck right now. Tell me some of your high mileage cars that you own.
That I own?
Yeah.
I got 150 on my 6 liter.
Okay.
So.
And we have no, I'm going to ask you to agree with me. And if you don't, then tell me. Every motor we replace has been damaged by the person who was sitting in the driver's seat with their hands on the steering wheel.
Yes.
Every single motor we've replaced.
Yes.
And when was the last time you saw one that came in that was just worn out but still running and it wasn't puffing? So, you know what I mean? So we got 200-300,000 mile motors out there. And for the Salem family, it's a amount of pride. You get over $150 and you haven't done any motor work, you're a hero.
Yep.
And the women are all the heroes. The guys aren't. Anyway, okay, Mo, you're up next, Mo. How can we help you? Hello, Mo? Oh, we lost the station altogether.
No, he should be there.
Oh, okay. There, I saw you. Hello, Mo. Can you hear us?
He's got his phone on mute,
okay,
too.
Well, we'll put him on hold. I'll try and get him.
Okay, no problem. So we can continue to talk about an overheat or running it low on oil is the death knell for most of the motors today.
Yes.
So
yes.
If you think that when the needle hits into the red and you start seeing steam come from under the hood and you're still 5 miles from home and you're going to make it, it ain't a good idea.
No, not a good idea. Shut it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then as far as oil is concerned, finish this sentence. Nationwide, every car, diesel, gas, whatever, you better be changing your oil somewhere around this kind of interval.
5,000.
Okay. And I'm going to go higher than that.
You
with
are.
A synthetic.
Yeah.
From 10 to 12.
We've talked about this before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's okay either way, because if you change it at 5,000, it's no big deal. I've had the opportunity to work for both Chevron and Valvoline as an oil expert, and we've tested that oil, and we found that it's just different. The synthetics are just different. The spread of range is wide. The lubricity of the oil is so much better. But we just know, too, the filters have improved substantially. And so now we've got filters that actually remove something out of the oil.
I'm going to say 5, but what's your usage? What do you use the vehicle for? In my case, I got Joe. We'll call him Joe.
Yeah.
Not Schmo, but we'll call him Joe. He uses city traffic, so he's stop and go all day long. I got Frank. He's highway miles. He gets on the road and just goes. We don't see him. Okay, Frank, I'm going to be okay with higher mile interval because he's always on the freeway. But Joe, at city traffic, I think he's got to do it every 5. For the simple fact, all the cycles that motor's going through,
and I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
If you've got Mrs. Smith in Albuquerque, then she goes 4,000 miles a year. I'm going to do her oil change once a year. I'm going to put a synthetic in it, but I'm going to put an oil change once a year because that's all she needs.
Right.
And she's building up a lot of water because it's short trip to the liquor store and to the sewing club and to all the other stuff that older folks do, like you and me. But if it's like in my case, I'm running up and down the mountain from Payson to Tempe. I'm hauling horses. I'm hauling trailers. I'm hauling wood. I'm hauling all kinds of stuff. And I'm flogging the dog.
Yeah.
And so I go 10, 12,000 miles, but I also hold how many? 10, 12 quarts of oil?
Your 12 quarts.
12 quarts of oil.
Yeah.
So it's, and I've had oil analysis done on mine just for the fun of it to try to prove to my staff and my son and everybody else that what I'm doing is not hurting the motor. The metallurgical report comes back always nothing.
Right.
There's nothing but normal aluminum and stainless steel and all that other stuff. Just nothing but normal.
Right.
But I think the tailor for me is how many miles do you drive a year and what kind of oil are we going to put in your car? Are we going to put conventional, which is good to 3,000 to 5,000, semi-synthetic from 5,000 to 7,500, and synthetic from 7,500 to 15,000, and according to Mobile One, at 20.
Right.
1 minute.
So that's how it kind of goes out. We're cutting our own throats when we put people on a 20,000-mile oil change because we don't get to rotate the tires. We don't get to sell them windshield wipers. We don't get to check their brakes. We don't get to do a lot of that stuff because they don't come in.
Right.
But, you know, what do you do?
It's the new way, for yeah. sure. Yeah.
And if you put them on a conventional oil when their car calls for a synthetic oil and you bring them in at 3,000 to 5,000-mile intervals, that's, for me, that's kind of on the cusp of, wow. I don't want my name next to that thing.
Right, right.
And so it has everything to do with that. We're going to come back and do another hour. If you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. We're going to wait and see if Mo grabs the line. And if he comes back, that's fine. And if he doesn't, then you can take his spot, 602-508-0960. I'm Mark. He's Nate. We'll be back. Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, 602-508-0960. We have two people on the line. So if you want to get in line, 602-508-0960. If you want to argue with us, that's fine. Nate and I are used to that. If you want to talk about a car problem you've got and want some guesstimating on, we can do that as well. And Nate's really good with diesels. I'm really good with gas. And both of us are really good at BSing our way through life.
I don't know about that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. You don't have to raise your hand. I'll do that for me. Everybody knows that. We're going to go to Mo because Mo waited through the break. Mo, I understand you had a phone problem. It's no problem, but tell me, what kind of problem can I help you with?
Well, can you hear me this time?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, I can.
Okay, great. Okay, well, I just want your opinion. I'm a Dodge Ram guy like you are, I guess. Anyway, two questions for you about the Dodge Ram. The Gen 2 Dodge Ram, that body style they made from, I think, what, 94 to 01?
Mm-hmm.
The 5.9 gas. If you could give me the goods and bads of it. And my other question is what you think of the TRX, the Dodge Ram TRX, the new one that's out.
Okay, as far as the 5.9 concerned, you sound like a guy that you're used to the 283, 327, 350 short, small block Chevy motors and the 305, or the what's this, 302
Ford? 302 Ford, yeah. 351.
Yeah. Yeah. So the 5.9 reminds me of that. A very durable, it may not came out of the gate real good, but it's been refined to something that we can build lots of power if we want to make modifications. It's good, durable motor. And I see nothing wrong with the 5.9 as far as the diesel. It's not going to be anything you're going to hook up a three-axle horse trailer to and have the performance that you would want, but it is a good motor. Go ahead.
He's talking to gas, right? Yeah, 5.9 gas.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, gas.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. I can't comment. I overall, that year of truck, 90, I think it's 96 to 02. Great year for Dodge.
No, it's 94 to 01. That's when they made that Gen 2 body style.
Okay, 94 to 01, but great genre for the Dodges for sure. That's a very popular truck. We see plenty of those in the shop with the diesels in them that are still going strong. The interiors on those, I will say, seem to be falling apart more so than the engine bays. So whatever's happening with the 5.9 engine bay gas, I wouldn't be the one to talk to about, but... You know,
the 5.9 is not even on my radar screen as a problem engine.
No, it's not mine
I was trying to say it's kind of like the small block Chevy, the small block Ford, those kinds of things. They're just durable motors that last a long time.
Right.
And every one that we work on has been overheated or run low on oil or abused. That's it.
And they're still going.
And they're still going.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't.
Yeah, Mark. I've got the 01 5.9, and I love it. I've had no problems with it. I love it. And my next question is, what do you think of that Dodge Ram TRX?
That's a nice truck.
I know it's expensive as hell. It's like, you know, $87,000, but do you guys know anything about it? And if so, what's your opinion?
They're fun to drive. Very nice truck. Dodge has come a long way.
It's a dressed up, put every option we can put on it. It's the Cadillac Escalades of diesels. It's not my kind of truck. I mean, my Dodge truck, my 2012 Dodge truck, I bought it because it doesn't have diesel exhaust fluid in it. And I abuse it not purposely, but I do drive it hard, and I haul lots of horses and lots of lumber and all that other kind of stuff. But the 5.9 is to me like a small block Chevy, small block Ford. It's a good motor. The only time we ever see that motor is when they abuse it and they overheat it, they run it low on oil, or they decide to advance the timing to get more powder out of it and blow the heads off of it. And that's it.
Yeah.
So I don't, but as far as the 70,000, let me tell you something. I know a lady that just bought a Jeep, and it's one of those new Gladiator Rubicons. My first house in 1974 cost me $33,000. This Jeep cost her $70,000. So that bugs me. That bugs me. Those big $180,000 to $100,000 trucks, I don't know that I'm ever going to buy one, because it's just not that damn important to me to have something that vibrates my butt when it's tired. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I just don't. But there is a market for those, because all the guys that can't afford them that want something that's very special would get that, but it's not going to outrun my truck.
they come with plenty of amenities on the new ones, and those are nice to have. So.
And amenities is a good way.
Yeah.
I could never afford one, but I would just like to have the pleasure of driving one of those TRXs. You know, I've seen them off road, and you know, I just think it'd be a thrill just to drive one. You know,
well, I agree with you that we own a twin turbo Corvette, and everybody says the same thing. It'd be a thrill to drive it. The car's a 170 mile an hour car or something like that. You know, 7 second quarter mile, 7.9 quarter mile, and a 2.3 shift. But it's a nice car, but it's not anything that you can turn it over to your son. It's not anything that you're gonna go, you know, haul anything in. It's a special kind of deal. But anyway, good luck to you, Mo. Thank you very much. Keith, you're up next. How can we help you, Keith?
Good morning. You helped me with this problem last year, but my memory has faded on it.
Okay.
I have a 2008 RX350, and the low-pressure light is on. I've done the normal thing as advised in the book. But last year, you told me to overinflate the tires, drive it, and then I don't remember what I did next. Did I deflate them and then it reset it? Somehow it worked. Do you remember that?
What we want to do is we want to find the sweet spot of the air pressure. So what I said to you was let's jump up 5-6 degrees on all the tires and see if there's something that's better. Then let's go down 5-7 degrees and see if something's worse. So I'm saying let's go look at the range, but let me tell you, and you're talking about tire pressure monitoring system, yes?
Yes.
Okay. Today, I said it at the early part of the show, just stop by any discount tire. There's nobody that knows more about tire monitoring systems than them. They have virtually every single transmitter in inventory. They have the equipment necessary to talk to the system and talk to the different wheels. And they're really nice, and to be perfectly honest with you, I'm embarrassed to tell you that they probably charge you half as much as I would.
Okay.
And that's the very best thing I can do is turn your head, grab you by the ears, and focus you towards the discount tire guys. And then I like them, but they compete with me, and I compete with them. They're not going to put, you know, they're kind of structured with respect. They're not going to be moving. They're not going to put a 16.5-inch tire on a 13-inch wheel for you. And I might try that.
I use discount all the time. Okay, I'll run by there.
Okay, good enough. Thank you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And we have another caller. Who might that be?
Hey, good morning to Greg.
Greg, good morning. Greg, good morning.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Okay, I got a question. I got a 2015 F-150.
Okay.
Small motor. Stop, start, DLR when you pull up to a stoplight,
right,
supposed to come off.
Right.
Okay. Well, that's not working. So when I come up to a stop, I get a it goes forward, and then it stops, and I get a check engine light or check manual light.
Okay.
And I've taken it into the shop a couple of times, and they don't know what the hell to do. So.
Okay. Well, your start-stop has so many different parameters. I understand that there's some cars with start-stop where if you come in too abruptly, that they'll keep the motor running or they won't. So there's some parameters associated with when you come to a stop and we kill the motor, and then as soon as we see you take your foot off the brake and hit the gas, and that's assuming you're not a two-footed driver, because it creates problems if your foot's on the brake and you start hitting the throttle with your right foot and your left foot's on the brake, you're confusing the whole operation. So there are some idiosyncrasies around that. Here, try this. Let's start off with, how long has this been going on?
About a year.
Okay. Has anybody tried to fix it?
I've taken it into a shop in Northwest Phoenix a couple of times, and they say they can't find anything that's wrong.
Okay. Okay.
But I...
What code has it got? Do you know what the code is?
They haven't told me what the code is, no.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's kind of the code tells you that the problem's in Ohio. You have to find the city and the street and the house number to find it and fix it. But at least we know that it's in Ohio, or it's in Georgia, or it's in Louisiana. So the code kind of is important, and it tells us if it's fuel, if it's spark, if it's an electrical malfunction, if something. We had one in the other day that had an overheat issue, and the temp unit was shorted, and the wire was on the exhaust. And so when the exhaust got hot, it told the computer that we're in overheat, which turned on all the electric cooling fans and set a check engine light. It had nothing to do with the cooling system. It had to do with this burnt wire on the exhaust system.
Right.
So that's what really needs to happen. If your shop isn't... what part of town do you live in?
Northwest Phoenix, Bell Road, 43rd Avenue.
Okay. I'd try Automotive Dynamics. They're over there on 99th Avenue and Grand, on the northwest corner of 99th and Grand. I would call Automotive Dynamics and ask them if they want to take a look at this for you. Otherwise, you can go to Harker's Automotive, which is the next one in the city. He's at 38th Avenue and Indian School, and Harker's wouldn't have any problem
one
with
minute.
This. So either Automotive Dynamics. It's in Sun City. They've been around since 82, and Chuck that owns it, him and I have been friends since 1968, so I'm not sending it to somebody that, you know, that came out of the ground 2 days ago. So those are the two shops that I know that would have no problem finding your problem. They're going to have a diagnostic charge, and then you're going to have a part charge, and you're going to have a labor to replace the part. So you're going to have those three kinds of...
I don't have a problem with that.
Okay. All right.
I don't have a problem with that.
Okay.
Just want to get it fixed.
So, Automotive Dynamics or Harker's Automotive, those are the two that I would suggest that you call. Okay?
I got a second question.
Okay, go ahead.
Whenever I fill up the vehicle and I go to, I top it off and I go to restart it, I get a clicking. I have to turn the ignition off and then start it again. And
okay, but...
Right now I got a...
Well, wait a minute. When you're topping off the tank, is it kind of click, 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 and you're hitting the nozzle three or four times after it shuts off the first time? Is that what you're doing?
No, I just let it stop. And then I start the truck up, and I get a click, 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 and then I have to put my key back and then try and start it again.
Okay.
And then it goes. So.
Okay. Both of us are shaking our heads. We've never worked on anything like that on any Chevy, Ford, Honda, Toyota, Dodge or anything.
Well, could it be a battery? Could it be a solenoid? Could it be a switch of some kind that's going on and off?
We need to track down the noise.
Yeah.
What is the noise? What is it? Is it under the hood? Is it under the dash? Is it related to the throttle? Is it, you know, what the noise is? The noise is the first thing we have to identify in order to fix this thing. And so that if you can kind of pinpoint the noise and say to the shop, because we would hug you under these circumstances. He pulls in and he says, "Hey, come here. Let me show you this. I'm gonna show you. Well, I'm gonna turn the key on and start this up. And there's this noise. And if you touch that right there, that's the noise." How many times has that happened to you?
Not often.
Yeah, not often.
We like it when it does.
Yes, yeah. It saves them a lot of money.
Yeah.
So if you can put your hands around the dashboard, underneath the dashboard, if you can have somebody underneath the hood, if you can touch it and find the noise, and then you take it into a shop, you saved yourself, I'm saying $50 to $100. But I can't tell you what it is because I've never had that come up in front of me. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 22 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Nate from Strictly Diesel is sitting here next to me, and he owns a shop that's called Strictly Diesel because he doesn't work on VW bugs, and he doesn't work on motorhomes with gas motors. And he works, if it has a sooty exhaust pipe and it has diesel fuel in the tank, you got it.
I got it, yeah.
And Chevy, Ford, Dodges, and Nissan.
And Nissan, yeah.
Now, people always want to know, if you own a diesel shop, what do you drive?
I drive a Ford.
Okay. Yeah. Now, he did hit his head years ago, and the rest of us know that he hit his head, but because we tease him because he's a Ford guy, but there's a lot of us that are Dodge guys and Chevy guys with the 6.6 liters and stuff like that. We all have our preferences.
Yes, we do.
I loved the GM because it was the first V8, and that's the reason I bought my first GM. Was I figured it would outrun the Ford.
Right.
But it didn't.
No.
It didn't.
No.
All right, we're going to go to the phones. Ed, you're up first. How can I help you?
Well, I would like to address this question, and I'd like to pick Nate's brain. I heard you say you have a 6.0
yes.
diesel?
Yes.
Okay. I, too, have one of those. It was the last year, 07.
Okay.
I had some trouble with it at first. Fortunately, under warranty, went through a couple of turbos and eventually had the thing bulletproofed. You know, what should I look for? What kind of care should I give that engine? Things like that. I mean,
and this is right after he said he's bulletproofed it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, on the bulletproof comment alone, what shop did it? How far did they go with the bulletproofing? What is their policy for that? Because the bulletproof product overall is a great product to have. I don't knock it. I run it on my truck. It's But there's so much more to that term that can be done on a 6-liter that, depending on who bulletproofed your truck, they may have only done an oil cooler when there's six other steps, in my opinion, that could be done to help bulletproof that truck.
And let me put it to it in another way. There's a 1 to 10 scale. Where the hell did they go?
Right, exactly.
They started at 1. Did they stop at 4? Did they go to 9? Did they go to 10? So there you got all of that. Let me ask you a question, Ed. When you throttle that baby down to the floor, how much black smoke does it pour out of the tailpipe, and how long does it pour out of the tailpipe?
Very little.
Well, then it ain't a number 10.
Yeah, it ain't 10.
It ain't a 10.
So, 6-liter.
Well, I can tell you.
Go ahead.
I can tell you what has been done.
Okay.
ARP head studs, because a head gasket went under warranty.
Okay.
Aftermarket turbo, because I had two Ford turbos fail.
Okay.
We've got the, I better be careful what I say, EGR delete.
We're not asking for your driver's license.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. The fuel pressure regulator.
Okay.
Has been, you know.
Modernized.
Let's see if I can think anything. Yeah. I do have a tuner in it, which I just keep it on normal just about all the time.
What brand?
I've done a lot of pulling with it. Oh, heck.
Okay, that's okay.
That's all right.
That's
okay.
Remember.
That's all right.
You talk a pulling in it. Horses, a motor, a trailer, a two-axle, a three-axle. What do you got behind it?
37-foot fifth wheel.
Okay.
And most of its life, it's got about 73,000 on it is all. Most of its life has been pulling.
Okay.
And,
do you let the truck idle?
Go ahead, Nate.
Pardon me?
I say, do you let the truck idle a lot?
No. No, I don't.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Because we don't want you to let the truck idle a lot. And a lot of times that creates problems down the road that people don't, they don't go one and one equals two. And there is times to let it idle when you're warming it up, and there is times to let it idle when you're shutting it off and after you got off the freeway and you're pulling a load of horses and
sure.
you know your EGTs are at 14 or 1500,
right.
then it's time to let it cool off before
and
you shut
yeah.
it off.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Okay,
and
so.
I do those things, yeah.
Okay. So what's the question?
Well, I just wanted to, well, I'd like to ask you, Nate, I've got troubles with it, I run synthetic oil, I'm pretty good with the filters, fuel filters, and I don't know, what should I look for? I mean, you've got 150,000, just about twice what I have.
Okay.
You know, any suggestions as to maintenance, care, things like that?
I'm going to keep it real easy. 5,000 miles on an oil change, 15,000 on fuel filters, air filter as needed, and transmission, if you're towing, do it every 60. Overall, looking for, do you see white smoke on startup? Does it run rough on startup? Do you have any gauges on it that tell you boost?
EGTs.
Yes.
Or EGTs, do you have any of those?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I've got lube oil temp. I've got just about everything I need to know.
Okay. Keep your
pressure,
EGTs
keep
your EGTs below 1250. Make sure your cooling system and oil system are within 15 degrees of each other.
But so far you haven't. He hasn't blown up the motor, and he
yeah.
hasn't spent any money on the motor. He's got enough information in front of him and enough red lines in front of him to know what bad is.
You're doing all the right things. It sounds
yeah.
like so. Yeah. yeah,
yeah. So it's
well, except for this. You mentioned the oil change at 5,000, even with synthetic?
Even with synthetic, yes. And the reason I say that is because the
oh.
injectors on this truck, on this motor, are fragile. I hate to say it, but that's the best way to put it.
Okay.
And keeping the oil cleaner will
yeah.
increase the longevity of your injectors.
Now, you're going to get a little
okay.
bit of pushback from some other people on this, on the 5,000 miles. So my truck, I
yeah.
don't do that 5,000. I do 15,000. I do 12 to 15,000. But wait a minute, and I know we're talking apples
yeah.
and oranges,
yep, yep,
but
yep.
but we also have a filter that's a 3, 4, 5 micron filter. So
right.
we're catching all the trash. We're talking millions of an inch here. We're catching all the trash. So
yeah.
so Nate and I, we are the very best of friends. He's got to be 8'6" and I'm 5'10". So I have tremendous respect for Nate. but we and,
okay.
and we are not going to agree on what kind of oil we each use. I use Chevron. What do you use? What do you pour?
Depends on the day.
Okay,
so,
fair
yeah,
enough. And
yeah.
and so but these are normal kinds of things, and we're both as right as right, even though we might be on different ends of the spectrum. So that if you want, if your question is, and we got to wrap this up. If your question is you know, if your motor, when your motor goes to motor heaven, it's because you've overheated it or you've abused it. That's all there is to it. It'll last for 200 or 300,000 miles if you don't overheat it, you don't run it low on oil, and you don't abuse it. 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. And I'm going to push all the buttons I need to do, and we're going to go to Robert. Robert, thank you very much for holding. How can we help you today?
Well, hi, Mark and Nate. You guys make a great team. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I've got a 2014 Lexus ES350, about 125,000 on it. Runs like a top. But I'm having a vibration when I'm at speed and then I go to brake. I feel it through the foot, not really through the seat. And it's just a steady, fast vibration all the way down to a stop. I had pads and rotors within the last year. I've got fairly new discount tires on it.
Okay, well, stop for a minute. Stop for a minute because we don't make any progress when we talk about what didn't fix it. Let me ask you some questions. So this vibration only occurs when you begin to brake?
Yeah, and it's recent. It's after I did all that other work.
Okay, it's no big deal. It's no big deal. So it's definitely related to the application of brakes and slowing down. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, there's a rotor that's out around. I'll tell you, funny thing, mention this. We had a guy with a Porsche come in not too long ago, and he had kind of the same thing. And we found that we had a rotor runout problem. He had a brake pedal pulsation during application. That's what the technical word is. So we took the wheels off, but we put the studs right back on, and then we started doing runout, and we had this one rotor that was 30 out.
It's a big deal.
It's a brand new one.
Yeah.
And so we pulled the rotor off, and behind it was a big chunk of grease. and he didn't do it on purpose. It was inadvertent.
Right.
So somehow or another, during the assembly of putting this rotor on the studs and stuff like that, he must have scraped something on the backing plate or something like that, and there was this big thing of grease. So you wipe the grease off, put it back on, 25, 30 thousandths of rotor run out is gone, and the problem solved.
Wow.
So the real question has to be, is you said you had done all this work to it and stuff, but somebody has to go back through. And, you know, really, let me ask you, Nate, if you and I were in this car, and I was sitting in the back seat, and you started applying the brakes, and you got this activity to happen, I think it would be a good bet that one of us could figure out which corner of the car it's coming
probably
from.
Probably good, yeah, you bet. Yeah, you bet.
And so it's driving it, and maybe perhaps you drive it, Robert, and let the wife sit in different corners of the car, the right front, the right rear, and the left rear, and see if she can tell the difference, because if you can tell the corner, then that's where you got to go.
I would say he's feeling it in his foot, though. Most likely it's going to be in the front brake area.
I agree. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. My backseat passenger, I just asked him, and he said he really doesn't feel it.
Yeah.
But we can't say 100% sure that it's always going to be the fronts when we get it in the pedal, because obviously when we apply the brake master cylinder, we're sending pressure both front and rear axles, or diagonal, depending on what kind of Lexus it is. So those are the – but another thing that you could do would be is sit in all four corners and let your wife drive and teach her how to do it, and you sit in all the four corners and see if you can figure out which corner it's at. It's not that hard. On a 1 to 10 scale, this is a 4 or a 5.
Okay. So. Don't you think it's probably in the brake, like the rotors or...
Well, it has to be because it's on your pedal.
Yes.
Yeah, it has to be something to do with the...
Yeah, I was kind of worried it might be suspension.
No, not at all.
No, if you can feel it in your foot when you're braking, that's a brake concern for sure. So.
And a suspension is going to be a clunk. It's going to be movement.
Yeah.
It's going to be play. It's going to be a clunk when you throttle up hard, and it's going to be a clunk when you brake hard. And so we're shifting the suspension, the lower control arms, forwards and backwards. We're shifting the leaf springs. We're shifting the suspension components and all that kind of stuff. So, no, this is going to be a brake issue. Okay?
Yeah, it's a fast pulsing and braking.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, good luck to you. Thank you very much
for
holding.
I'll take back to work.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Robert. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And we have another one. Who might that be, Gil?
Say hello to Ken.
Ken, good morning. How can we help you?
Hi, how are you doing? Thanks for taking the call.
You bet.
I've got a Ford 500 at 06. And bought her off a neighbor who could no longer drive. The thing's in excellent shape, except he had an aftermarket ignition alarm put on. Same brand of it is Identity. I don't know if I can say that, but
okay.
I've searched for this thing on the internet, and I can't find any information on how to remove it easily myself. And, you know, I don't want to have to pay a whole lot to have that done. But what it's doing anymore is it's like an additional key fob that you sometimes have to press. Usually, most of the times, you have to press a button on it in order to deactivate the alarm, I guess, and then turn the ignition over.
Yes.
It occasionally hang up.
Okay, hold on a minute. Ken, we're not going to go anywhere because neither one of us are alarm guards. So we can talk about the symptoms all you want, but it's not going to, we're not alarm guys. But you said something at the very beginning. you said, I'm thinking about taking it all off. And that's if you came to my shop, I doubt very seriously is we would attack this.
You kind of broke up there at the very end. I'd like to just take it off, to remove it.
Okay.
That's a $150 to $300 job to remove that alarm.
I lose you?
And Nate, who would you suggest that he take it to have that alarm system removed?
Any basic automotive shop should be able to handle that.
Or an alarm company. A lot of guys out there that do just alarms. And so if you call around to them and you say, this is what I know about it and I want the alarm removed, really and truly, a couple of relays, a couple of hot leads, a couple of grounds, and we're going to leave the sensors where they're at. And we're going to just cut the wires on them and we're going to be done.
Yeah.
So this is a no big deal, but the stereo shop guys, and the guys that install these alarms are the ones that you need to talk to. And forget about the name. I mean, if you can come up with a name, you can try it, Adam. But you basically say, I want you to remove the system from the car. This happens a lot. I bet we have this once a year.
So many older alarm systems are just non-existent anymore, and they cause so many problems.
Fred Flintstone alarm systems is what we talk about. Yeah. And they're not wired the way that everybody else is. They're not using any kind of Wi-Fi communication and stuff like that between the sensors and the control module and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, we got to run, but good luck to you, Ken. 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. So if you live in Mesa and you're looking for a good garage, I only can tell you about one, and that's Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They've been around since 1970. Brian and Thelma, his wife, run Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, but I know both of their parents. And we started back in the 60s together. So Brian and Thelma have smelled gasoline at the dinner table their entire lives because their dads, just like my older brothers and stuff, came from that gas station. And so if you're in Mesa, I'd love to give you three or four options of really reputable shops, but I can't. All I can tell you is that the Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, they're on Main Street just east of Stapley, and Brian and Thelma know exactly what's right and what's wrong. And how to fix cars. So if you're looking for a good shop, then Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Let's go to the phones. And Chuck, thank you for holding. How can we help you?
I'm going to be off the air for a minute.
Chuck?
Hello?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I have a motorhome, 5.9 Cummins diesel. It's got about 70,000 miles on it. And I've had a problem the last year and a half. Going up a hill, long grade, the check engine light will come on. If I back out of it a little bit, the light will go off after like 10, 15 seconds, and then you go on your way up the hill and that sort of thing. I've had it checked. One guy told me the number meant low fuel pressure, and he talked about filter changed like 3 months earlier to that, and the previous owner, his record showed that they'd always been changed every year. After he supposedly cleared it, the next time it it didn't go off like going out 10 towards the Texas Canyon rest area, the other side of Deming, which, you know, is pretty steep, but it did when I got to El Paso on the far side.
Okay, now hold
on,
Chuck.
Grade.
Hold on.
Yeah.
None of this makes any difference. What we have here is we got this 5.9 that's got a fuel supply problem, or apparently a fuel supply problem.
What year is this 5.9?
It's, 07.
Oh, seven.
It doesn't dot. Everybody asked me, so does it dot?
Okay.
I said no. It's just that I back out of it, so it kind of dies.
Okay,
it's
our turn right now. It's our turn. So
okay.
All right, hang on just a minute. Go ahead.
That should be 07. Should be a common rail diesel in there. So fuel is key for sure. You need to worry about your supply pressure to the CP3. There is a blow off valve after the CP3 that could be leaking, which could cause this problem, and you could have excessive return rates at the injectors as well. So there's three, four expensive areas here that need to be looked at, but one of those is going to fix your problem.
And what we've got is a fuel supply pressure problem. It's supply and pressure. So he's losing pressure, and it's running out of fuel, just like a plugged fuel filter would cause.
Right.
But as you just correctly said, there's a variety of places that we can impact the fuel pressure in a negative way.
Correct.
And you have to go in there and look at each one of them.
And fuel pressure being at what the computer's looking at as far as the rail goes, because it has no idea what supply is.
Right.
So is our supply causing the problem, or is it something to do with the rail and the pump? on the high side that's causing the problem. There's two different things to look at.
But if it was fuel and rail, it would come and go, and sometimes be okay, and sometimes not. I'm asking a question.
Yes, and it kind of makes sense what he's saying because it's under high load applications. So that's when we're asking for the most pressure. So again, is it our supply side that's failing, or is it the
Where it boosts the pressure.
Where it boosts the pressure to the injectors, is that the area where it's failing?
Right.
Yeah.
And so now, is there on this old 5.9, on this very old 5.9, are there fittings there for you to put pressure gauges on there to go drive it?
Not on the high side. We're going to be looking at a computer for that information.
Okay, a scanner.
But as far as lift pump goes, yes, you should be able to check that with a gauge and see where you're at.
Okay.
Yeah.
So someone's going to have to check the fuel supply to the high-pressure pump,
yes,
and then after the high-pressure pump.
Yes.
So that's what it's all about.
Yes.
It goes from the tank through a fuel pump, and then from the fuel pump to the high-pressure pump.
Yes.
And the high-pressure pump then creates 4 million PSI of fuel.
26,000.
36,000?
Yeah, 20 to 40,
I'm told,
yes,
is the range, depending on the demand, so, and where the throttle's at and all that other stuff.
Right.
So you got some work to do, and that's where you're going to have to go is what Nate talked about.
Okay. Yeah, because on freeway, it goes up to, like, you know, I normally don't, but it'll go up to, you know, 2500. It'll shift. It'll go back up to 25, you know, and that it never hesitates there. It's just on these long, steady hills, you know, these long grades.
Well, you're running it out of fuel. And so the question is once you find the problem and fix it, then you can explain why on flat ground and in these circumstances there was no problem. But it's fuel demand. The demand is highest when you're going from here to Flagstaff up a hill on an August afternoon that the temperatures are over 100 degrees.
Phoenix to Tucson, right, you probably never have a problem, but Phoenix to Flagstaff, it's a whole other animal. So that's.
So you know, if you wanted to do something simple, you'd do the fuel filters on it first. That's what.
I've done that in the last year and a half. I've done that twice.
Okay,
I didn't do anything.
Okay, well, at this point, you should have a scanner, and they're about $35,000 if you want to buy your own.
Not that far, but yeah.
And then you're going to have some kind of gauge or something to be able to determine what the low pressure is and what the high pressure is on the system. And so you'll have to.
And about what kind of money would I be talking about to have somebody check that out?
Good question on a motorhome. I don't necessarily deal with that, but you're probably looking upwards of $200 to $400 for a diagnosis.
And I was going to say $500 plus or minus $100.
Yeah.
Because, we don't know how accessible all that's going to be in a motorhome chassis. That's the real problem.
Yeah.
And so it can be it can be something that was really a clean install, or it can be just the worst kind of nightmare, and you're moving stuff to get to stuff. So,
anyway,
good luck to you, Chuck. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. Do we have anybody else in the wings right now, Gil?
Oh, the phone lines are open.
Phone lines are open. We got time for one or two more callers if you get us. It's a call, 602-508-0960. Thanks for spending your Saturday with me. It's not like we're going to – we still got, I don't know how many minutes we got here. We got
eight
about
minutes.
Six minutes. So, anyway, you know, the gas and the diesel are the same fuel supply systems with the exception of the high-pressure side of that.
Yeah.
But in a car, we have 40, 50 pounds coming out of the fuel tank because that electric pump is sitting inside the tank,
right,
and we're shoving that forward, and we're not enhancing that any to spray it into the engine.
Right.
But in the diesel market, it's obviously enhanced.
Oh, yeah, big time.
So when we come from the fuel pump forward, what kind of pressure reading would he expect on his 5.9?
On the 5.9, you're probably looking at 16 PSI. That's usually the supply.
All right, plus or minus.
Plus or minus.
And that's on the pressure side, and then we have a vacuum side as well. How hard is the suck?
Oh.
If you're going to do that. 10, 12 pounds, I'm
on
guessing.
On a motorhome, where's the tank?
No, you're right.
Yeah.
Okay, now, once we deliver that and we're in the 15, 16-pound range and we send it to the high-pressure pump, it's going to take it to what?
Idle, 7,000 PSI, wide open throttle on his year. I think it's around 26,000 where it'll be peak.
Yeah, and that's not where you're going to take your tire gauge and hook it on the fuel rail and see what the pressure is on the fuel rail.
That'll cut your arm off. So
it's a stupid thing to do.
Which is why we leave it to the scan tool and let that tell us.
Exactly.
So, yeah,
because there is a sensor on there.
Yes.
And there is a sensor.
Yes.
And the sensor, if it reads real low and it says it's 8,000 pounds, then probably the sensor's bad, and because it wouldn't run otherwise.
Right.
So you, those are the things that you have to know.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All righty. You know,
I think we had another phone call.
Who might that be?
Say hello to Stefan.
Stephanie?
Stefan.
Okay. Stefan, how are you, Stefan? How can we help you?
I'm doing good. I've got a 2005 Honda Accord with two issues that I don't know how to deal with. It's got the newfangled dual AC system. Driver's side is stuck wide open, blowing heat all day long.
Okay.
And then there's a and then the cruise control is bad. What would it take to get those repaired?
Well, the diagnostic process for the dual AC, there's going to be a blend door, and this blender, I want you to picture the letter Y, a capital Y. Okay. The stalk that the capital Y is sitting on, that's going out the vent, and we got hot air on the one side of the Y and cold air on the other, and then we got this valve that opens and closes and door and gives you the correct temperature. So this is going to be one of those that there's going to be a diagnostic charge, and I'm quite sure you're going to be north of $100 on the diagnostic charge. Now, there's a small possibility that this could be a bad wire. This could be something that somebody dropped a taco down the dash and it's stuck in the blender. There's a lot of things that can happen. And so somebody has to go in there and do that. So as far as your air conditioning is concerned, obviously we're stuck. The blend door is stuck on the driver's side vent. So you just say it's hot all the time and it never gets cold, but the passenger side gets hot and cold if I ask for hot and cold. The other thing you can do is exercise that and see if you can make it better. Go all the way hot as it'll go and use it for a day. I know it's going to be tough. And then go cold and see if you can break it loose. Do you have nothing to lose and other than a little inconvenience? As far as your cruise control is concerned, if it's not working, is it a fuse? Is it the brake light switch bad and it's telling it not to go on? Is the command being sent and is the servo pulling on the throttle? All of those things have to be checked out. I would imagine you're not going to spend less than $85 to check out the cruise control, and I can imagine that it could be up to $150. And you have a small chance of this being, it costs you $82 to find it and 10 cents to fix it. But don't look forward to that. But that's the best you could hope for. Okay?
On the cruise control, it used to work, and it'd be, I've got a 30-mile drive to work, and it used to be cutting out about halfway to work on the freeway. And then it just quit completely.
Okay. Try this on your cruise control. I want you to hook your left foot underneath the brake pedal and pull it towards you hard. Pull the brake pedal towards you hard. And then make numerous attempts to set your cruise control. If you say, Mark, I pull up on the brake pedal and I can set the cruise control, but the minute I let go of the brake pedal, it cancels the cruise control. Then we need to replace the switch and adjust it underneath the dash. So you can try that.
The light comes on the instrument panel, but it immediately goes off.
Okay. Well, the brake light switch cancels the cruise control. That's it. The brake light switch cancels the cruise control. So that's the first place we're going to look is the brake light switch. And unless you got some really small fingers and you've been up underneath the dash of your Honda Accord, it ain't easy. It ain't easy.
Yeah, no.
So that's why we have these little technicians that are two foot six, and they have little bitty hands, and we put headlights on their heads, and we stuff them underneath the dashes, and they go in there and figure this thing out. But anyway, Nate, thanks very much for spending your Saturday with me. We took care of 16 callers today, and we certainly had fun. We had our fair share of motorhomes and diesels and all kinds of problems.
Yeah, good stuff for sure. It's great phone calls.
I think at the end of the day, I would say to those of you that do business with guys like Nate and I that own shops, repair shops, is if you come in, if you just write everything down and hand us a piece of paper with your cell phone number on it, that is just something we don't have to regurgitate it to the service writer. The service writer gives it to the dispatcher. The dispatcher gives it to the technician. We just handle the piece of paper to the technician.
That's great.
And that's when we really want to hug you. We know better than to try to hug you. Those kinds of things really endear you to us. And then there's a lot of stuff. And then when it's time for give and take, asking questions and stuff, just listen carefully to the question and then answer the question. But don't go off on, well, my brother said, because when you start with my brother said, you lose our complete attention.
Right.
It's very difficult for us to memorialize that. Anyway, mark@marksalem.com is my email, mark@marksalem.com. Every Saturday we're here from 10 to noon. We'll see you then.